Parshat Bishkala. It says over here in the very, very beginning of the Parsha, Vayhi, the Shalach Paro Zaon, the Lonachon Elokim Derech Haratzplishim Karofu, Klamar Elokim Tani Nechem Ahangarosim Mocham Veshav Mitzrayim. Okay, when Paro sent out the people, God did not want them going by the way of the Plishim because it was very close. So even though it was very close, because God said, maybe the people are going to feel bad when they see the war and they're going to go back to Mitzrayim. So what's that referring to when it says they're going to see the war? So Yonis Menuzil, Targum Yonis Menuzil says in this pasuk, it's referring to the war of the Bnei Ephraim with the Plishim. Bnei Ephraim left a little bit early. Those Jewish bones were scattered throughout the deserts. And what they were worried about is that the Jews would see those bones in the desert and immediately get scared and want to run back to Mitzrayim. That's what they're afraid of. What exactly happened? So this is from Shmos Rabbah Parchov, Halacha Yod Aleph, however you want to put it. In the Seder Adaros, they say the following. In the year 2418, 30 years before the Jews left Mitzrayim, a false prophet by the name of Yignon or Goin, it doesn't say, it's Machlokas which one, Yignon or Goin got up and said, it's time for us to leave Mitzrayim. They made a cheshbon of 400 years from the Bris Bein HaBesarim. 400 years from the Bris Bein HaBesarim. Instead of from the birth of Yitzchak, 400 years from the Bris Bein HaBesarim. They gathered an army of either 30,000, 200,000, or 300,000 men, women, and children. Right? An army plus. And they all left together. It was mainly of the Bnei Ephraim, of children of Ephraim. They relied on their strength. They took weapons with them, and they took a lot of money, but not much food. They assumed that when they went on the road, after they got out of Mitzrayim and they were able to fight their way out, once they got out of Mitzrayim, they'd be able to buy food from the Plishtim on the way to Eretz Canaan, then conquer the land of Canaan and beat everything out there, and everything will be all good. They came to the city called...
It's strange that of all the tribes that would leave would be Ephraim.
So we're going to talk about that. They came to Gass, and they found many shepherds, tons of shepherds out there in the land, and they said, we haven't eaten in 2 days. Please give us some of your food. We're starving. Some of the sheep. So the men wouldn't sell them anything because they said, we don't own the animals. These animals are owned by all the Plishtim. We're just the farmers. We're just the guys taking care of them. We don't own anything over here. The Bnei Ephraim were starving, so they decided to just take it for themselves. They got themselves ready, but they were weak. Meanwhile, while they were getting themselves ready for war, the farmers had called over, the shepherds had called over all the people who were living in Gass, that city, and Gass were able to fight off Ephraim for that very first day. They called for reinforcements, and all of the Plishtim came to be able to fight the Bnei Ephraim. Altogether, you'd have to go with the Medrash that says that it was 30,000 people altogether. 40,000 men from the Plishtim came up against the Bnei Ephraim the very next day. The Bnei Ephraim were tired, they were starving, they hadn't eaten anything yet, and although they killed 24,000 of the Plishtim people, 24,000 of their men, they were completely wiped out. Only 10 people remained of the 30,000 that left. They went back to Mitzrayim. They told Ephraim, the son of Yosef HaTzadik, what had happened. Ephraim was still alive, and Ephraim mourned them for many days. It's a straight pasuk. The problem is that nobody ever does Divrei Hayamim. In Divrei Hayamim, Chronicles 1, Perek Zion, Pasuk Chof Aleph and Chof Beis, it says straight out, V'zevach b'no, shuselach b'no, v'ezer v'elod, v'horgum amshe gas and olodim v'eretz v'oretz. And the people of Gas killed them. They lived in the land. Kiyar de l'kach, B'nei Ephraim went down to go check out their cattle. V'yisabu Ephraim avi Yomim Rabin, Ephraim their father mourned for many days, and his brothers came to help him, to console him for everything that had happened. That's what happened with Bnei Ephraim. The Bnei Ephraim thus died, the 30,000 people died, 10 people remained, 10 people came out, and everything was all good. Those Bnei Ephraim were left as bones in the middle of the desert. Sanhedrin Sadi Bezim Abay says they came back by Yechezkel. Yechezkel went out to a place called Bikas Dura, the Valley of Dura, and he resurrected the dead. He did Tchias HaMesim. It was Tchias HaMesim on these bones of the Bnei Ephraim. 1,000 years later, that's when Yechezkel came by and gave them Tchias HaMesim. They came en masse to Nebuchadnezzar and slapped him in the face for destroying the Beis HaMikdash. Slapped him in the face. That's what the Gemara says. And Nebuchadnezzar saw them. Apparently they were just bones, and said, who are these these people, to which they told him, this is what, it's B'nai Ephraim, Yechezkel is being Mechayir Mesim in Bigazdura, and Nebuchadnezzar said, I knew they were powerful, I didn't know they were that powerful. Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Rishon, says, the one who's quoted by the Shulchan Aruch all the time, says, they were punished for not taking the bones of Yosef with them. They should have taken him out. Yosef HaTzadik said, when you leave Mitzrayim, take me out. Yosef was not taken with, therefore they were destroyed. But the Be'er Basada says, Yosef on purpose did not appear for them, and that's when he went hidden. Can you imagine? A king of Mitzrayim like Yosef HaTzadik not having a pyramid that's made after him? Of course people knew where Yosef HaTzadik was buried. But sometime before that, for whatever reason, somebody had it in their head. They hid the bones of Yosef HaTzadik. They brought it somewhere, either in the Nile River, or they put it at Kabernet Shomalachim, some type of birthplace of the kings, and put him over there in that area, so that none of them, although they didn't do it in that purpose, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, said the B'nai Ephraim would not take Yosef HaTzadik out when they left Mitzrayim, because otherwise his bones, Yosef's bones, would have been left in the desert with the rest of the B'nai Ephraim. Yalkut Reuveni says that's why the sign that was given to B'nai Yisrael when they were ready to leave Mitzrayim was supposed to be Pakod Yifkod, when there's a second Pekuda. The first time they go out, it's not going to be the time. It's the second time around, the second time somebody gets up and says, I'm going to take you out of Mitzrayim. The second time that happens, and that was Moshe Rabbeinu, then you're going to leave Mitzrayim. That was the sign, says the Yalkut Reuveni. Now the question is, as Aaron said before, why would Shevet Ephraim do this? What was Shevet Ephraim over any other Shevet? Why was their Shevet involved in this more than anything else? So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says, the Shibud was harder on B'nai Ephraim more than it was on any of the other Shvatim. And it's a poshut reason why. They were used to being citizens of Egypt. They were born in Egypt, the B'nai Ephraim. Ephraim himself was born in Egypt. They were full citizens of the Commonwealth. They were part of Paro's palace. It could be that Ephraim even kept up after Yosef HaTzadik died. He was also in the palace after that time. And the people were all around hanging out with the senators of Mitzrayim, the people in charge of Mitzrayim. They're hanging out with Paro himself. They were all involved with Paro himself. They enjoyed life that they had as Yosef's grandchildren in the great palace, and now they became slaves to their own slaves. Their Egyptian slaves that they used for themselves in their houses were now in charge of them and making them work in all Mitzrayim. That was crazy for them. They couldn't take that. They needed the Geula more than anyone else because they couldn't get used to this. They couldn't get used to that. But wouldn't Menasheh feel the same way? I mean, Ephraim is the younger brother of Menasheh. Menasheh, you'd think, would be in the exact same boat. He would also feel bad about the fact that he was working in Mitzrayim after being in the palace all these years. Especially Menasheh, who worked as the Meturgam and the translator for Yosef HaTzadik and the Shvatim. He was the guy who was in between. He was in the palace. So why wouldn't Menasheh feel the exact same way? So here's Pshat. It's a very big palace. That the only two grandchildren, that got a bracha by Yaakov Avinu were Ephraim and Menasheh. Why them? Because Yaakov was worried about them. They were the only ones to get brachos because they were the only ones that anybody was worried about. They grew up in a disgusting land full of arayas and full of terrible people. They had no shaykhus to Eretz Canaan because they'd never been there. Ephraim and Menasheh never went to Eretz Canaan. They weren't born there. They had nothing to do with Eretz Canaan. So what Yaakov, was afraid of is that they were going to be full citizens. They were going to enjoy what it's like being Egyptian. That was terrible to him. And Yaakov said they can't consider themselves Egyptian citizens. He kept telling them, Bonai Haim, they are my children. Li Haim, they're mine. They might have been born in Eretz Mitzrayim, but Li Haim, they're mine. They're my children. It's as if they were in Eretz Canaan. That's why whenever he was talking, when Yosef HaTzadik was there with Ephraim and Menasheh, he kept mentioning the Eretz Canaan. I buried Rachel in Kever Rachel, the Eretz Canaan. He kept saying, he said it three times when he was talking to B'nai Ephraim. He's trying to get into them. The land of Canaan is your land. Mitzrayim is not where you belong. You belong in the land of Canaan. Make sure that you consider that your home. Now, Menasheh was born to Yosef when Yosef still remembered his father's household. Menasheh, his name is Kinashani Elokim Eskol Amali. I'm starting to forget. I'm forgetting all my toil, everything I did in my father's house. But at least I remember a little bit. Menasheh still had a shaychus a little bit to Eretz Canaan. But Ephraim was already too late. If Ephraim was named because I was parani v'ravani be'eretz Mitzrayim. I had puravu and I had children in Eretz Mitzrayim. Ephraim was named for Yosef HaTzadik considering himself part of Mitzrayim. His name even sounds, this is an unbelievable line from Yaakov, his name sounds like an Egyptian name. Look at all the other names we know from Mitzrayim. Paro, Potiphar, Shifra, Pua, Sopnas Paneach. Those are the six names we know of anybody in Mitzrayim that are mentioned in the Torah. Ephraim fits the bill. It's got a fey in there, or a pay, however you want to put it. There's a resh in there. It sounds like one of the Egyptian names. It sounds like any of the other Egyptian names. There's a hint here. He needed more help because he was more of an Egyptian citizen. He had more to do with the Egyptians than anybody else. Yaakov learned with them. Manasseh already knew Lashon HaKodesh. Manasseh knew Lashon HaKodesh before Yaakov even came down. But Ephraim, he just knew Egyptian. He grew up in Egyptian schools, he did the Egyptian things, he was all around the Egyptians. And for that reason, when Ephraim became the Avadim, when his children became the slaves in Mitzrayim, he couldn't take it. He said, I can't handle this. How in the world could I be around the Sheba? How could it be me? I used to be the guy in charge, and he couldn't take it more so than Menashe. It could be other people felt that way. And it could be that B'nai Ephraim was a code word. It didn't literally mean just the children of Ephraim left Mitzrayim. It could be that there were other people with who also felt were so high in importance. How could we now be Avadim in a country that turned against us? Maybe they all felt, these people felt that they had to leave for that very reason. But the point was that they had an Egyptian mentality. What's the Egyptian mentality? We're strong. We have weapons. We can leave and we will beat up anyone we see. If we need food, we don't need to bring food with us. Why bother ourselves with bringing camels and donkeys full of food? We'll go to the Plishtim and we'll either buy it or we'll force it away from them. We'll go there and we'll fight because we're strong. There was no tefillah involved. There was no HaKadosh Baruch who was going to help us. It's just, this is what we're ready to do because we've got the strength. That Egyptian mentality killed them. That's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you can't do such a thing. And they were a powerful nation. They went into and they slapped Nebuchadnezzar in the face. They were clearly a powerful nation. They were clearly had something that nobody else had. Although, I'm not so sure if I was Nebuchadnezzar's guard and I saw a bunch of bones getting up and walking toward me, that I would be able to stop them either. So granted, that might have been a little bit more scary. But regardless, it seems that they were a very, very strong army and they couldn't win with just their strength. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu was trying to show us from B'nai Ephraim and what happened with B'nai Ephraim. Those are the 30,000 men. We're skipping around to a little bit later in the parsha. It says in Pasuk Tezvav, the beginning of Shlishi, they're standing at Kriyas Yamsuf. The people are about to, they're complaining. They said, what's going on here? What did you do? Moshe, you brought us out of Mitzrayim to make us be buried in the Midbar? We're going to be killed by the Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim were behind them. On the right side of them were huge mountains. On the left side of them were these wild animals. In front of them is the Yamsuf. There's nowhere for us to go, Moshe Rabbeinu. You brought us to a land that's just going to kill us. Why did you do this to us? So he said to them, Al tirahu, don't be afraid. Stand and see the salvation of Hashem that He's going to do for you today. What you see Mitzrayim today, you will never see them ever again. Hashem will fight for you. I want all of you guys to be silent. What does all you guys, I want you to be silent mean? It sounds like don't daven. You don't need to daven here. Don't worry, just go. Just you'll be fine. But then the next pasuk, Vayomer Hashem al Moshe, Mati Tzakelai. Why are you davening to me, Moshe Rabbeinu? Daber al Bnei Yisrael v'yiso. Tell Bnei Yisrael to travel. He just did. And what's he davening for? Why is the Kodesh Baruch Hu telling him stop davening? He just told Bnei Yisrael not to daven. So I don't understand. Was he davening? Well, Bnei Yisrael, he told Bnei Yisrael not to, but he himself would daven? What's he doing? What's going on here? So here, there's a tremendous nitziv. Rashi says that Moshe was davening. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him the following. Lo eisata laharich b'tfila. This is not the time to have a long, drawn-out tefillah. She yisrol nesunim b'tzara. Bnei Yisrael are in pain. They're in trouble. It's time to just tell them to go. Just go. You'll be fine. If you go into the if you go inside, you're going to be perfectly fine. It's strange. Strange. So here's the call. The general rule is the following. In a war that works through natural means, where there's weapons, you need strategies, and the only way to win is to fight with physical force. If that's the war that you're going up against, in that case, you must daven. You absolutely have to daven, even if you're guaranteed victory by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The two examples that you have in the Torah like that are number one, Amalek. When Amalek came to fight at the very end of the Parsha, Moshe Rabbeinu went with Aaron and Hor, to the very top of the mountain. The Medrash says that they fasted and they sat there and stood in tefillah up by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We all know the famous. Moshe Rabbeinu had his hands up in Shemayim, and Aaron went on one side to hold up the arm. Hor went on the other side to hold up the arm, and his arms were standing up to Shemayim, davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, asking HaKadosh Baruch Hu to please let Bnei Yisrael win. It's a Molech. A Molech is evil. They're antithetical to everything that HaKadosh Baruch Hu stands for. How in the world would Bnei Yisrael lose to a Molech? How could that be? And in that case, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu still knew, you have to go daven. Because when it's a physical war, when it's a physical fight, and you're fighting in that way, you have to, you must keep davening in that case. Case number two, later on, by the case of Melchemes Amalek, when they fought, Melchemes Midian, when they fought against Midian, all the way at the end of Parshas Balak, when Matos, they go up against Midian, when they're told about it in Parshas Balak, and they fight them in Parshas Matos, 12,000 men were sent. But it's funny how it said it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, send 12,000 men. Ish echad, ish echad. One man, one man. Says the Medrash, one man to fight and one man to daven. For every man that you get to go daven, I want another man to go for you get to fight, I'm sorry, get another man to go ahead and daven. So that there's an individual davening for every soldier that's out there. I still remember the most powerful thing that we had in Eretz Yisrael was during one of the wars, I don't remember, I think it was 2004, but one of the wars when they were going up against Lebanon, it was 2003, 2004, I'm sorry, 06 couldn't be because it wasn't there. So whenever it was that they went against Lebanon, they had soldiers that were going up against the other army, and I still remember we were in the Mir Yeshiva, and a guy walked around holding this stack of papers, and each stack of paper was a different name of a soldier that was fighting in the army, and he handed out one piece of paper with that name to every person that was in the mirror. So however many thousands of people that were there, he handed out to everybody there, and you had the name, and you were davening, that was your soldier. Your soldier. And you had to feel some type of... I never got a hold of the guy. I never knew who the guy was. I could never find him after that. Never knew who he was. But it was the most powerful statement. Your tefillos and your learning goes for that one person. It goes for that person that's fighting in that army. We learned that from Melchemes Midian. 12,000 men fought in the war. 12,000 men davened for them. And even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Nikom nikmas b'nei Yisrael meis Midian, go fight this vengeance war. He guaranteed victory to Moshe Rabbeinu. Told them, go fight it, you will win this war. Still, Moshe Rabbeinu stood up and davened for them. Still, Moshe Rabbeinu got up, and the Pasuk says that Moshe Rabbeinu, and even 12,000 men were davening for each one. What's the pshat? The pshat is that when it's a physical war, you always go ahead and daven. Individuals, and the reason why is simple, because even though in a war you might win the war, individuals can still be killed. So therefore, in order to stop those individuals from being killed, to make sure that doesn't happen, you have to have a tefillah to help every single Jew, that every single Jew doesn't die. Every Jew will be a different thing. And that's only true by a normal physical war. Here at Kriyas Yamsuf, was a little bit different. Everything was going to be with a huge miracle, B'derech Nes, where it wasn't going to be a normal situation whatsoever. And in that situation, there's no need for a tefillah. You don't daven when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is already giving you miraculous occurrences. When something is happening in a crazy way, you don't need to daven in that case, says the Mitzvah. So Moshe told everyone, stop davening. But he assumed the following. He thought that it wasn't going to be through miraculous means because you're not Somech al Anes. Moshe Rabbeinu had no idea what was going to be with Kriyas Yamsuf yet. He had no idea what was going to be yet. He told them, you're going to see the salvation of Shem. But he thought that they were going to fight a war. Hashem would fight the war with them. God would be with them as they're fighting the Mitzrayim, but there would be a physical war between the Jews and the Egyptians. And they're waiting for the cloud to settle, the cloud that went behind them to separate them from the Mitzrayim. That cloud would go up, and then they'd start a real war between them. So Moshe Rabbeinu got himself ready to daven. He stood up on top of a mountain, he looked down at Bnei Yisrael, and he started to daven. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, that's not what I want. This is not about a physical war. That's not what we're doing here. I want them to Yisau, travel, go into the Yamsuf. You're going to see the sea is going to split. Moshe Rabbeinu had no idea what was going to happen here. And that's the pshat. He told Bnei Yisrael, this is not a time for you to daven, it's a time for me to daven and you to fight. But then he realized, that's not it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, that's not the time. Don't daven at all. It's a nace. It's a massive miracle. Just travel. Just go ahead. If you do that, everything's going to be okay. And that's the idea. It's miracle time. It's miracle time. And you don't pray during such a thing. The Kedushas Levi, Kedushas Rabbi Levi Yisrael Yerodishev, brings down that if, in fact, nobody had jumped in, because you all know the Kriyas Yamsuf started not only from Moshe Rabbeinu putting out his arm, right, but also from Nachshon Ben Aminadav jumping in the sea, says the Kedushas Levi, had there been no Mesiris Nefesh on the part of Klal Yisrael, had Bnei Yisrael not jumped into the Yamsuf to make it happen, so to speak, had they not done that, Kriyas Yamsuf would have been done through natural means. It would have happened in a natural way. How could it be natural? How could you have such a crazy thing? There was a wind already blowing all night long. The wind was gaining. It was gaining in strength. It was pushing and pushing and pushing, similar to Makas Arba. That just like by Arba, the wind blew and blew and blew, and then in the morning, it blew out all the locusts that were around the Red Sea and pulled them into Mitzrayim. That's what the Pasuk says. Similar over here. What this wind would have done, it was a powerful wind and building up momentum. It was ready to go right up against the sea and make a huge, whatever you want to call it, a rift in the sea. A massive rift in the sea. And who knows, maybe that rift would have been just a really quick rift, and Bnei Yisrael would have had to run as quickly as they could through there. Somehow the material would have jumped in at the same time and they would have been drowned in the sea. But it would have been in a natural way. It would have happened in a natural way, and somehow that sea would have split. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when he saw that Nachshon Ben Aminadav jumped into the ocean, that's when Hashem decided we're going to do it b'derech Nisi, because Nisim only happened to Mesiris Nefesh. He didn't know he was going to live Nachshon Ben Aminadav. He went into the sea up until his nose. That means he was dying. He couldn't breathe through his mouth. He couldn't breathe through his nose. He was dying, standing in the ocean in the Red Sea, and all of a sudden the whole sea split. That Mesiris Nefesh by Nachshon, willing to die because he believed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would do something, that doesn't require tefillah. So Moshe picked up the matzah that he had put down in order to daven, because when you daven a Shemona Esrei, you got to put everything down. You can't have anything in your pockets. You can't be holding anything in your hand. And he went up on top of the mountain to create this Nes Nigla. And in the end, the Nes Nigla happened by HaKadosh Baruch Hu splitting the sea on its own without any need for any wind, without any need for the wind to do anything for them. And that's the pshat behind what happens to the Yam Suf. So it could have been through a crazy natural way. Yeah. I'm sorry?
The wind blew the whole night.
The wind did blow the whole night to prepare itself, to get itself ready for when Bnei Yisrael was going to go through the sea, which should have been in the morning. But instead, Nachshon Ben Aminadav jumped in, which allowed them to go through in a miraculous manner and not need the wind to be able to split it. That's the concept behind it.
There, I mean,
the wind.
Yeah, so it's...
And in the end, what the wind did was dried up the seabed so that it didn't become wet. So when you stepped on it, it didn't become very, very wet. Aside from that, there's so many things. Can you imagine walking on top of the corals in the bottom of the Red Sea? The Red Sea is full of corals. It's a coral reef.
No,
you can't walk on that. It has to be that something else happened, that there was something on top that the wind did, that it blew some sand over it so that they were able to walk on level ground, that it wasn't hard for them to walk all over the coral reef. It's not like a regular lake, like Lake Michigan, where it's sand on the bottom, or even rocks on the bottom. It's a huge area. If anybody's been to a lot, to the aquarium down there, and looked in the little thing, I haven't been Zohar yet, but I've seen pictures of it, but they show you, it's a huge, huge reef, and that's, granted, that might not be the sea that they went through. They would have been through the other side of the Red Sea, but that side of the Red Sea also has coral reefs on it. It's the exact same type of...
Not to say that still isn't miraculous, mm-hmm. but it certainly does... To some extent, it looks like it undermines the whole Nisi.
100%. Because there was never supposed to be that miracle. And in the end of the day, you always have to have something to deny, so to speak. If anything was done in such a huge Nisi that there's nothing to explain away, it would prove that there's a God. You can't have that in this world.
It's not in a natural way. It's still miraculous that it happened. Like, however you want to spin that.
Okay.
The fact that... The
so with Entebbe. You can spin anything. Anything could be called that way. So with the Scud missiles in Iraq, from Iraq, you know, in the original Gulf War, all these things are miraculous. Nobody's doubting the fact that it was miraculous. Granted, this was a massive miracle of huge proportions because HaKadosh Baruch Hu did it b'derech Nisi, right? But there's always ways to explain things away. HaKadosh Baruch Hu always allows people to deny it if they want to. Look at Amalek. 3 days later, Amalek fought them. Amalek didn't believe in anything, even though they were right there watching all this happen. That's the concept. I will tell you, though, that there's an unbelievable... to be able to get down this whole concept of what it means for Derech Nisim, you know, for all these things to happen, although it takes us a little bit off, this whole idea of Mesiras Nefesh in order to make these things happen, it's a crazy concept that they didn't believe. They didn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu up until this point. Ve'aminu ba'Hashem v'Moshe Avdo, now they trusted in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and in Moshe his servant, now they did it. By the way, that is the only, that pasuk that we say in the Haggadah is the only time that Moshe Rabbeinu's name is mentioned in the entire Haggadah on Pesach night. We don't mention Moshe Rabbeinu once and Seder night in the Haggadah itself, except for one time. We quote this pasuk, Ve'aminu ba'Hashem v'Moshe Avdo. They believed in Moshe and HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe his servant. So that's already something for another time. So here's the question. How did Bnei Yisrael not get it before they came to Kriyas Yamsuf? They saw 10 huge makos in Mitzrayim. They saw the osos, that Moshe Rabbeinu did with the hand turning into saras, the water turning into blood, the staff turning into a snake. They saw all those osos. What else would you need to prove that God exists? What else do you need to have such a thing? And then what was different at Kriyas Yamsuf that made them really believe? That made them say, oh, now we believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How do you understand something like that? So there's a sefer called the Imre Kodesh. I got it from somebody, the Strelitzker Rebbe, a crazy, crazy little sefer. He says there's two different types of people. One type of person thinks that you're a tzaddik if you do crazy miracles. If you can read my mind, or if you can turn this table into an elephant, then you're a tzaddik. But if you can't do that, then you're not a tzaddik. You have no ability to be a tzaddik. And that's the pchuseyam, the little people who really don't know anything, the people that we don't say anything about. Let's stop. Real people with minds, real anshei da, know and understand that miracles mean absolutely nothing at all. Nothing. It does not make you into a tzaddik. In fact, it doesn't even prove anything to anyone. The Rambam in Hilchos Yisodi HaTorah, Perek Zayin Halacha Aleph, says that Moshe Rabbeinu was not believed in. They didn't believe in Moshe Rabbeinu because of the osos that he did. That was nice. It was a nice thing to see. They were great things. But no one believed in that, because anyone who believes in such a thing is messed up in the head. How do you believe in God just because you saw something crazy? Maybe he did it through Kishuf. Maybe he's a magician. Maybe he does sleight of hands. Anybody? Maybe is David Blaine a Navi? Is David Copperfield a Navi? I mean, are these people in the VM? Obviously not. So Moshe Rabbeinu doing some crazy things, especially in the land of Egypt, which were the kings of magicians, doing something like that was not a proof to anything. They looked at it and they said, this is nothing. This doesn't mean anything to us. Every oath that Moshe Rabbeinu did was litzorech, a need for something they needed. It was never supposed to be a raya for his nevuah in the first place, a proof for his prophecy. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu originally didn't want to go. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him, I want you to go down Mitzrayim, he said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what are you going to do? You're going to do crazy miracles? You're going to make Bnei Yisrael see some crazy things? I don't want people like that. I don't want to lead a bunch of people who are going to say, oh, that was cool, I'm going to follow that guy. I don't want those types of people. I want people who are thinkers. I want people who know that there's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Why would you send me down there to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's what the line of Hain Lo Yaminu Li. They're not going to believe me. Because if they do believe me, then they're not worth saving. If they don't believe me, then I'm not going to gain anything by going. Hain Lo Yaminu Li, they're not going to believe me with just a couple cute signs and a couple cute miracles. That's not going to happen. To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them. So it's Yachas Al Mitzrayim. When you bring the people out of Mitzrayim, Ta'avdunas Elokim Al Ahor Hazeh, they will serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu on this mountain, says the Rambam. The real proof will be at Matan Torah. When they get to Matan Torah and they see me with their very own eyes, that's when the Ramuna is going to be strong. You're right, they're going to have doubts up until that point. They're going to have sfeikos, and they're going to be grateful you took them out of Mitzrayim, you punished their oppressors, you killed their oppressors. They're going to be grateful, and they're going to love you, and they're going to think you're a great guy. But they will not believe that you're a Navi until they see it with their very own eyes. And that won't fully happen until Matan Torah. And that's the point. That's why the Torah says itself, Lo Tishma El Navi. You don't listen to a Navi who just brings osios. You have to test them. You have to see. Because any time that he does something like that and he tries to disprove to you or try to take away a mitzvah or give you an extra mitzvah, whatever it is, all he's trying to do is deny something that you saw with your very own eyes at Matan Torah. This is a powerful Rambam. It answers up every single question of, well, wait a second, aren't there other prophets in the world? What about Muhammad? What about Yashka? What did these these guys do. They did crazy miracles. How were they able to do that? The answer is, you can do anything with Shemos HaKadoshim, or with Kishus, or with Maisa Shedim. If you know what you're doing, there are ways to manipulate the nature of the world to be able to create these crazy things, to do these nutty things. There are ways of doing such a thing. That was never a question. That was never a doubt. Everybody knows that you can do such things. That was obvious. What was so crazy? What were they supposed to see? They wanted to see that there was a God that took care of them directly. And they were given that directly at Har Sinai. Until God reappears to a multitude of people, not just one guy, or two guys, or five guys, or a couple disciples that are getting around and saying, we saw this or we saw that, until God appears in a public fashion, the same way He did at Har Sinai, signs and miracles and crazy stuff means nothing to us. It does absolutely nothing for anyone. It's cute. It's a nice thing to watch on a Motzei Shabbos for a magic show. And it's whatever. It's the same thing as pulling a rabbit out of a hat, but it doesn't mean anything when it comes to our religion. Says the Strelitzker, it's close to what happened at Kriyas Yamsuf. Says the Strelitzker, says the Imrei Kodesh. Everyone looked up into Shemayim and they saw the Kisei HaKavod. They saw the throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they saw the Yad of Hashem that happened at Kriyas Yamsuf. Now granted, it was not Matan Torah, but they all together had a vision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and saw Hashem themselves. Not through Moshe Rabbeinu, and it wasn't while they were sleeping, and it wasn't while they were sitting there on some induced on some crazy drug. They all saw with their own eyes, after they saw a miracle happen, they saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu involved directly, and they were zocha to sing a song about it together. Together, everyone as one. This wasn't an os. This was a crazy idea where they saw things greater than Yechezkel and Navi was able to see. When you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu's behind it, that's when you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu are 100%. That's when you have that emunah by Aminu Ba'Hashem of Moshe Avdo. Now to accept the Torah and to do what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, that you need another vision of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's what Matan Torah was for. Says the Strelitzker, this is the Pshapain, Vayiru Ha'ames Hashem. The people saw instead of feared HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is the Pashup shot in the Pasuk. They feared God. So we can look at it as, and they saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Aminu Ba'Hashem of Moshe Avdo. And that's what it meant, that they believed in HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe's servant. And that's how everybody should believe. It should never be a belief based on crazy, crazy things that the guy is able to do. You can see anything now. There could be a Yashka coming down out of a cloud, walking up to us and saying, I am the true Lord. You should follow me and do everything I say, and we have to look at him and say, this is ridiculous. You're ridiculous. I'm sorry?
How about the rapture?
Rapture. Whatever the rapture is going to be. Whatever the Mayans and the Incans and every other Indian nation, however long their calendars went to, it means nothing to us until there is a full and ultimate, you could call it revelation, to everyone together. And until you get it, just because I got it, doesn't mean that everybody else should be following it. Just because you got it doesn't mean that I'm going to be following it. If it happens to everyone, then it's something real that you take literally and you can verify it and it's all good. Until that happens, there is nothing to talk about. We all know that it's not going to happen until Mashiach comes. It's not going to be there until Bayom Ahu Yehi Hashem Echad Ushmo Echad. And until that point, it's not going to be. So our summary is, Ephraim's huge mistake of 30 years, how they were off in 30 years, specifically we asked why him, he had it the worst, because he was that guy who was born in Mitzrayim, a citizen of Mitzrayim, and then he became a slave, and that's why he left a little bit early. We said tefillah is for natural occurrences, things that happen naturally. There is no need to daven during a nes when a miracle happens, and the emunah in HaKadosh Baruch Hu came now, and it became full by Matan Torah. That the emunah Hashem did not come from the osios and the makos in Mitzrayim, it only came from what they saw now, and that's the idea of what it means to really believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Stop with that. Have a good Shabbos, guys.